shut up and sit down.
Welcome to the Health and Wealth Podcast with your hosts, Tim and Carter.
What's trending, enrichers? Carter Wilcoxon, founder of CSI Financial Group here with my co-host and former wealth advisor, Tim James, founder of
ChemicalFreeBody.com and your new health advisor. This is the show where we reveal the connection between physical and financial abundance.
Hey, welcome back, enrichers. Carter Wilcoxon coming to you live or recorded, unless you're on the show today, from Phoenix, Arizona. And as always, I am, of course, pleasantly, excitedly pleased to bring in my co-host, Mr. Chemical Free Body himself, Tim James.
What's up, brother? Did you push record?
Yeah, we're recording.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I guess we're good to go.
Yeah.
I'm projecting because I forgot to push record on one of my group coaching sessions and I had to go back in and just kind of remember what I said for about an hour. Kind of frustrating.
Well, I don't know if you remember or not, but remember we did that one time like three or four recordings ago and I was like, oh my goodness, that was such a great intro.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Hold on. Let me hit start. So anyway, yes, we are actually recording and I'm really excited about talking about a few things, something personal, by the way, that I'm going to be talking about, which, you know, I'm
you're out of greens.
It's a dad thing. It's not Green 85, actually. It's a dad thing. But I'm also very excited about bringing in our guest today, Glenn Bush from sunny, I'm assuming sunny, Southern California. Oh, yeah. Glenn, how are you, bud?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Doing fantastic. We really are glad that you're able to make the show today. I know you had a little technical difficulties a little bit before we got started and everything, but you know, that's just, I guess, getting the computer jitters out of you.
Yeah. Like I said, the flawless system. And of course it has a flaw when I actually have to do something important.
Yeah. Go figure. Well, Tim, I know that you yourself, you're coming up. I think you said, because some of the enrichers have heard us talk about you moving. You're actually physically finally moving this Friday. Is that the deal?
Friday, yeah. Yep.
So you're excited about that.
There's a 5% chance it'll get delayed to the next week, but it looks like that's what's going to happen. So I'll be loading up the trailer and the truck and tootling on down the road back home to Eastern Oregon to build out the chemical-free home, baby.
Yeah.
So you guys getting privy information here. I'm doing a documentary on building this house. It's going to be on having a chemical free home. And you wouldn't think about this, but like people just don't realize how toxic a home really is. And if you really get into studying it and get into some experts and stuff, there are major issues with homes, you know, just from glues that are off gassing, paints that cure for 4.5 years that you're breathing in from carpets that off gas. And what's happening with the breakdown of basically the human frame as we're reaggressing or de-evolving as a species because of the stress and the pollution and the lack of nutrients, people are becoming more and more sensitive to chemicals where, you know, 10 people walk in a room, one person would choke to death on them. Two might not feel as good. And then the other, you know, seven wouldn't notice it that much, right? But it's still affecting them, and you don't know it. So we're bringing in Andrew Pace. I don't know if you ever heard that episode. I had him on my show. He's he owns a place called the Green Design Center.
Yeah,
so for
yeah.
those listening, if you want to link, or you want to go over to that, if you ever need paint or grout or any building materials that are non-toxic for you and your family, your children, thegreendesigncenter.com. Andrew Pace is really cool. He was actually on the board of directors for, you know, that LEED certified green movement. Like how all the architects are getting LEED certified. That was kind of a big thing back in like 2007. It was, you know, we're going to go green. We're going to go green, people. But he had to leave the board of directors because they're selling sustainability. They're not doing anything really in regard. It's not based on human health. So they'll grind up a bunch of tires that are toxic and off-gassing and make a flooring out of them. And they get tons of points in that building for LEED certified. But then people walk in and some people can't even walk in that building because of the sensitivities. It chokes them out. But everybody walking into that building every day is breathing that in. It's bioaccumulating. So it's really exciting to bring this out to the world. So we're going to have mold experts and there's other things, you know, people that live in Florida, you know, you're growing, you built homes on a swamp. So there can be mold issues there and black mold's all over the place. And some people like my dad's like, I ain't going to bother you. But Unfortunately, it does, and it gets into the tissues, and it's causing problems, and this is more of these microscopic noceum stuff we're talking about. So we'll save more of this for the end.
Yes.
If Glenn has any questions about that. So, Glenn, I hope you brought your health questions for the third segment, but right now let's switch gears and let's get into Glenn Bush and what he's all about and what he's doing. I'd like to hear his backstory.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thanks, Tim. And Glenn, we are, and our enrichers are excited to be able to hear. So let's go ahead and go back and then talk about, you know, what was it that obviously, you know, CFA, which is a big deal. I think you might be like the fifth CFA that we've had on here. And we know that there's a lot of extensive schooling that takes, and interesting backstory or whatever, I'm sure, on how you got there. But let's go ahead and talk about what led you down that path, right? Originally into the financial services business, because you've got a unique background with sports and everything. So I'm interested to learn, you know, how far back it goes, and maybe what was the influence that led you down this path in the financial services arena?
Oh, man, got to go way back. So I was an animal physiology and neuroscience major in college, which sounds like I want to be a doctor. Did not want to be a doctor, so I wasn't pre-med, so I wasn't focused on anything right then and there. And part of my major was you start working in labs and you get to kind of that, maybe you're going to go down the research path. Well, I didn't want to do that. I just liked the science. I like learning more about the brain, a little more about the body. And then I was playing water polo in college. And once that ended, I started coaching high school. My teammate from high school became a head coach at a local high school here in San Diego. And he asked, would you like me to help? So I said, sure, I'll just do it for a little bit. I'm not sure if I'm going to like it, but I really enjoyed coaching. And so I was done with college. I started coaching and I wanted to do more of it. So I said, well, I guess the best career path for that would be to become a teacher, because the schedules kind of line up, especially if you're coaching high school in age group. So I got my master's in educational sciences. So I actually taught seventh grade life science for 60% of full time. I wasn't a student teacher. I actually was kind of thrown to the wolves and had to teach for a full year. I was 23, 24. And that's the most tired I've ever been, is just being a teacher for that 1 year with middle schoolers. I would just come home, hit the couch, and like wake up like 9 p.m. going, what happened to my day? I just fell asleep. I enjoyed it, but by the end of the year, I realized I didn't want to make that my career. I didn't see myself doing that for the next 25, 30 years. So during all of that, my roommate in college and my roommate kind of just afterwards, he was an econ major. So he had all the econ texts, and I would actually kind of the dorky side, I would read those for fun on the side. And he had some of these initial investment books. So I started reading those, you know, stuff about Warren Buffett, some of the big value investors back in the day. And it really sparked an interest in me to get into the investment side. And so I was able to, this is now, you know, coming out of the dot-com crash. So it's more bull market makes you a genius versus you're actually smart. It was like, I put some money to work, made some money. So that helps, you know, get you more involved with it and get like, this is maybe the career path I want to go. But I used that money to kind of, once I was done with grad school, to live with some friends. I didn't work, I took some time off, and I said, okay, I like this. I don't have a background in investing, so I'm going to try and just get my way into the industry, just get my foot in the door somewhere, see if I actually really do like it, and then kind of go from there. And I found the firm in San Diego, American Money Management. I think I sent them a letter, said, hey, I'll work for free. I just want to learn. And then maybe I go to business school or what have you. And luckily, I sent this letter to quite a few firms, and they're the one that really responded. I said, hey, we just lost somebody. We launched these two mutual funds. We need a lot of back office help, and we'll see how things go and kind of get you into this business, and you can start your learning process. And I'm still there. So I got my foot in the door. After a few months, they liked me. They said, oh, you actually kind of know what you're talking about. They kept giving me more and more responsibility. And because we were a small firm, there's the financial advisor side and there's the investment side. And so I really wanted to get more towards the investment side, but I started doing those financial advisory stuff as well. And so it was kind of just a parallel growth path. And the CFA, and that's kind of where it started when I first joined them, said either if you go to like the top five, top 10 business schools, that's good for the investment world. If not, really the CFA is kind of what you want to do. You want that education that it takes. So it took... started there in 2007, 2008. So I finished my CFA, that curriculum up just about a year ago. I pushed it off. And I finally had motivation in 2018 to do it, to really knock it off. I'm one of those people where I get upset if I start something and I don't finish it. And I had started a lot of things I was interested in, but I just kind of pushed to the side. And I really got frustrated with myself of, you didn't finish anything. Why are you quitting these things? So I said, the CFA is something that you want. That's something for your growth, your personal growth and business and professional growth that you want. So go do it. Go do it now. And so I started in 2018. And then obviously COVID, all that stuff kind of helped delay things until I actually finished it. But I was past the first test, turned right around, studied hard for the second one because it was just probably 6 months later, finished that one. And then when I was going for the third one, that's when COVID hit. So all the tests got pushed back. And then my girlfriend got pregnant in February. So I thought it was going to be perfect. I said she was going to be pregnant. Kid is due in October. The test was going to be in June. So I'll study really hard. I'll take the test in June, pass, fail, what have you. I'll enjoy the second trimester, the third trimester, and being a new dad. And then the test got pushed back. And so now baby's born, our daughter Peyton, and I'm studying and trying to finish this test up with a newborn, pandemic, all that stuff going on. But I pulled it off. And so that kind of got me to here where now I finally have the CFA designation behind my name. And the career is still growing and still trying to learn as much as I can.
That's awesome. So, you know, what I'm really interested in is, and by the way, congratulations on your first, it sounds like, right?
Yeah. First child.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Being a first time dad. I mean, I remember like it was yesterday. You know, it's an amazing change, and your perspective overnight changes once you become a parent.
Oh yeah. you hear those stories, but then you have it. You're like, yeah, it's my focus is now you. It's not just me and what can I do this weekend or what trip can I go take? It's like, no, it's, I got to do everything for you. And it just changes that priority system.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is, I'll hear these stories about people that don't have kids and they try to relate it to being like, yeah, well, you know, it's kind of like when you have a dog, you know, it's the same. No, no, there's nothing like your own flesh and blood child, raising a child, the way you feel, the internal changes that happen. And for me, it was like instantaneous, like overnight. I was like, okay, no more messing around. I got to be serious now. Right. I mean, and I got this creature, this living, beautiful thing, my daughter, Caitlin. I'm just like, I got to do everything in the world to protect her and do this, right? Anyway, it just changes your whole outlook on how everything looks different after that. So
yeah, there's something I remember hearing, because I had a lot of friends that had kids. I always wanted to have a family. I'm going to be 43 this year. And so she was born, I was 42. So I didn't know if I was going to have a family, but I remember this quote when I was talking with other friends was, when you don't have kids, they tend to be rating your life a little bit happier because you have all this free time, all this stuff to do versus parents. But the parents have, I'm going to probably botch it, but a more fulfilling life. They have a purpose now. And so, yeah, it's tough. Times are hard. You can't do a lot of the free stuff. You've given up some of that single life, but you have that focus, you have that purpose, and you find meaning in your life quicker versus the single guy just, hey, let's go out this weekend. Let's go to the ball game. Let's, you know, I was happy. It was fun, but there's no purpose behind that.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. But anyway, so congratulations. But what I want to know is, because Tim James, it's a first, our very first water polo player. We've had a lot of athletes that have been on this show, but you're the first one that played water polo. And I've always been curious about, you know, water polo. They, you know, when you watch the Olympics and everything, you see the guys are out there and they're, you know, they're faking the ball and they're up on water and they look like they're doing a lot, but then they show the camera underneath and it's like, holy cow. I'm just curious because you were
conditioning, man, the conditioning it must take.
Right? I want to know what it's like to be a water polo player. And before that, what made you want to become a water polo player?
So California kid, so all the water sports, you know, water polo is a very regional It's growing around the country, but it's mainly a West Coast where most of your Olympic team players are from the West Coast. My uncle swam at Claremont McKenna. I forget which Olympics it was. He had just missed the cutoff time by like 1/1000th of a second for butterfly. I think the story is he blames my grandpa because he was the only one home. The dog had died, so he had to bury the dog. And so he says that tired out his arms. But he also played water polo at Claremont McKenna. And so when we go to the pool, he would show me how to egg beater. He showed me what to do because my dad was a big time football player. And up until high school, I was baseball, basketball, did some volleyball, tennis, you know, wrestled a little bit my freshman year in high school. But I knew how to play. I knew how to egg beater. I knew some basics of water polo. And so our PE class freshman year, you do these rotations. You had 6 weeks of swimming. And the water polo coach at the time was that PE teacher. So on Fridays, it was just jungle ball water polo. It's like, here, we'll put two cages in. Everyone go in there, do what you want. And so I knew how to egg beater, and I would just sit in the cage, and people would take a shot, and I would block it and have a good time. And coach came up to me and said, hey, why don't you try out for this summer? Why don't you just come play club water polo for a summer? I said, ah, no, I got to do some basketball stuff. I got baseball. I got some camping trips. I don't know.
I got sports to play. Sorry, I can't play water.
Yeah. And I had a good friend on the team already. And another one of my good friends got asked to try out. And so they kind of peer pressured me. And so I came back from one of the camping trips. I started doing it, and I just really, really liked it, really loved it. And they had, this is kind of the chip on the shoulder. So this is what I remember is from middle school basketball. There was this guy, John, who was tall. I don't know how tall he was in middle school, but he's by high school, he's 6'6", 6'7". And for the middle school basketball team, I got cut for him. And so I was really upset. I thought I was a better basketball player. I'm not as tall as him, but I better skills, I thought. So he got asked to be a goalie too for that water polo team for that summer. And so he was the goalie for the first part, and I took over the second part. And then when he came back for vacation after I thought I was doing well, he's like, oh, you know, slapped me on the back, thank you for holding my position. I was like, it's my position. So I'm the goalie now. He said, yeah. And he goes to the coach and says, hey, John, who's the goalie? He's like, Glenn is. And I just love that moment because I, you know, revenge and motivation. So that's how I got into it. Was I knew how to play from my uncle, and then I got kind of just coaxed, you know, into it from friends and the high school coach.
Wow. So what is it what's happening underneath the water as a goalie? Like, I mean, it's not like you can, I mean, you're above water the whole time, and you're continually churning, right? I mean, it's not like you're standing on the ground, right?
No, yeah, true competition. It's at minimum 6'6" water. Most Olympic ones are going to be deeper because those guys are even big. Like, most of those guys are on average are 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah.
But yeah, you're treading water. So it's the egg beater. So it's tough to describe, but almost like your knees come up like you're riding a bicycle, but then your bottom parts of your legs flare out and they just alternate like an egg beater to kind of elevate you up out of the ground. Field players get to use one hand for the ball. Goalies can actually touch the ball with two hands because we got to block it. But the field players get to use that extra hand there to take a shot. And so we're watching the field players just sit there and fake the ball, and our legs are churning, our hands are churning, and then we got to watch the ball off their hand and make the save. And there's different types of shots, but there's a guy like in basketball, you have the center. So a water polo, we have call the center forward. Where he posts up and you feed him the ball. He's either going to score or draw a penalty. And that usually leads to a man-up situation, like a power play in hockey. And those types of situations, the goalie is really just on their legs. Their hands are out. You're really just egg-beering up to keep yourself up out of the water. And when you're in shape or you're one of those professional water polo players, yeah, you can get up almost out to your waist. A lot of them can hold it up past their chest. So it's takes a lot of stamina, but it's just your leg. You're not used to moving that way. So that's the hardest part about the sport is, you know, you're not running. So you have to choose your body to go in a different way. And that's just, once you get that, it gets easier. Because then it's like any sport. You just do it over and over and you get the conditioning. But it's just an unnatural movement.
Man, that's crazy. So just out of curiosity, you know, and this is one of the things that I wanted to talk about. I'm pretty excited. I wanted to share with the Enricher something that is going on this week. My son, who's a freshman in high school, and you're talking about how your freshman year just brings that up to in my mind. But he qualified, or he this year got asked to be on the high school team, private school here called Phoenix Christian, and for the on the golf team. And he ended up qualifying individually for state as a freshman. And he is down in Tucson, Arizona at Omni Tucson National right now, playing the first of 2 days in the state championships right now. So anyway, that was, I wanted to make sure that I recorded that on this podcast today, because that was a big deal. As, and by the way, it's going to go by just like that for you, just so you know, Glenn, that's how fast.
Yeah. I
mean, he was, you know, newborn yesterday, and now he's 15 years old and playing high school golf and playing in state. But what I'm curious about, because I see my son who works out a lot, he works on his game, he's at the course 5-6 days a week. Obviously, I know how much he eats. I'm just curious, what was your appetite like as a 15-year-old playing water polo? I can't even imagine.
I feel bad for my parents, and I feel bad for all my friends' parents. My best friend in high school, we live so close to each other, and we would figure out when our moms were going to Costco, and it was almost on an alternating schedule. And especially by senior year, we maybe have like, we didn't have the last period of class. So before practice, we would, and we also did swim team too. So we would race home, chow down a bunch of food, you know, frozen burritos, whatever you can, not the most healthiest stuff, just high school kids, like just give me calories, come back and still then go swim and work out for 2 hours. It's, and in college, we had an electronic scale. So we'd always weigh ourselves before practice, see how much weight we lost during practice. So especially during Hell Week, I remember you could order like, you know, an extra large Papa John's pizza, breadsticks on the side, eating it all, and then weigh myself the next morning, still down, you know, 2 pounds.
That's absolutely incredible. And I had a feeling it had to be something like that, right? Because, I mean, look, I've gone swimming before, you know, even recreationally. I can't imagine, because how long are those games typically?
The games are pretty quick. They're probably about an hour and 20 minutes total time. It's four quarters of 8 minutes. So there's stop time, quarter breaks, halftime, timeouts. It's a pretty quick game, but, you know, wrestling is, it's not a very long match.
Yeah.
But they're so physically exerting themselves so much, and they have to train so much just to be at their top for, you know, 3 minutes. I don't know what the time has been, a long time since I wrestled, but for like 3 minute rounds, you get three of those. It's not very long, and they're exhausted. The same thing with water polo is you're just so exerting so much physical stamina out there, wrestling with people, trying to swim up down the pool. The only break is if there's a goal and you just swim back to half, or if you get subbed out. But yeah, you just train and do so much conditioning just for that short amount of time. So like high school, we would have three practices a day. So it'd be an hour and a half to 2 hours during the kind of the bulk of the training session. College, we would average maybe start there. You just do two practices, but they're about 3 hours to 3.5 hours. So you're, you know, half, pretty much your whole sunny day is out playing water polo.
Wow. Tim James, that's crazy.
Yeah, man. I was just thinking about wrestling and stuff like that. And was like, that was crazy, crazy conditioning that we did. Oh, you need to make weight. We'll put on garbage bags and show up here at 3:30 in the morning and start running around up in a hot room for 2 hours and just dumping. Yeah. Trying to lose weight.
Going on those long runs. We had the one at our high school was you would start from the high school, run up to the lake. It's our official lake. Dip your hand in it, you know, run back, make sure your hand's wet. It felt like that was like a 6 mile run. You're like, why are you doing this for wrestling? We don't go anywhere. You stay in this little circle. And it's like, no, the conditioning, because you gotta exert so much in a short amount of time. It's just
Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. Well, it's you know, you learn one thing I learned from sports is you learn to perseverance, you know, and being prepared, right? Being prepared physically, mentally, and emotionally for these games when you show up, because that's, you know, when the rubber meets the road and things get tough, all that preparation is going to make the difference. And I've seen that too. There was actually a baseball team where the coach was just, I mean, he was tough on the players, and they won national championship after national championship year after year after year. And that's what people wanted to win. So they put the work in.
Yeah.
All right. So guys, we're going to take a quick break When we get back, we're going to get into what Glenn's done. He did all this prep work. He's been working on his body, his emotions, his mind, his spirit. He's all taking all that into the financial services world. We'll learn what he's doing to help his clients save and protect their money. We'll be right back.
Estate planning. What does that even mean? When the inevitable happens for everyone on this planet, your estate plan kicks into action. But first, let's start with what an estate is. An estate is simply everything you own. Now, here's the issue and what needs to be understood when this event occurs. You only have two choices on this plan. Number one, either you plan how your estate gets handed out and distributed to those you leave behind. Or number two, your state decides who gets everything you own. For the first time ever, you can now take complete and total control of this plan that you've been deprived of for most of your life and generations before you. You can get personalized assistance along the way with a team of specialists whose job it is to make sure you have true peace of mind. It's important to understand that estate planning is a journey, and rest assured that our team will be available to you all along the way and at every step. Welcome to eState Plan, home of the last estate plan you'll ever need. To learn more, make sure to reach out to your local advisor licensed with us or go to our website for more information.
What's up, Enrichers? Tim James here with my co-host Carter Wilcoxon. Today in the house, we've got Glenn Bush. And we just heard about his background, and I'm thinking maybe this should be the health and wealth and sports podcast, because Carter just drags that in there everywhere we go. And it's funny because we're attracting a lot of athletes, which is very interesting.
Well, you know, what's interesting though, Tim, if you think about it, and this is 20 years as an advisor to advisors, right? I mean, I've been working with the financial advisors all over the country for 20 years. That's typically the theme. A lot of them, if they were competitive and they were good at sports, it just tends to be, it translates into the next career. And a lot of them find the financial services business. So it's not like I'm dragging it into there. It just kind of sort of goes with the territory. And that's why golf typically comes into the picture as well, because a lot of business is done on a golf course.
Oh yeah, for sure. Sure.
Yeah. I have he's not retired, but he used to part of the San Diego DA. Same thing. When he has a stack of applicants for the DA's office, he likes to see who played sports in college or just in general. So they know that we're a team environment. If you played that team sport, I kind of know already that you know how to work with a team and be a part of a team.
True.
Through. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on with you right now, Glenn. Like your practice, you know, you've been at AMM, right? I remember you saying earlier on the first segment, you've been there since like 2005, 6, 7, somewhere around there, right?
I think I officially started January 2007. So just in time for the financial crisis.
Okay. Well, it's funny because I was getting ready to bring that up. And I'd like to know what it was like to get started. Now, it sounded like it was just sort of almost internship-ish when you first started, though.
Yeah, the first few months, and then it became, we're going to actually put you into a client-facing role. You're going to start learning to talk to clients. So this is kind of getting, you know, when you learn how to swim, the method of just throwing the kid in the water and see if they sink or swim, it was kind of a sink or swim, because it started off well, but then the market started to turn, housing started to turn. And here I am. I was, you know, started my career a little bit later, so mid to late 20s, and I'm having to learn how to talk to clients about their money that's looks like it's disappearing to them, and trying to make sure that they do the right thing with their assets and their money, and also not sounding completely inexperienced and completely dumb and saying the wrong thing, because I'm just starting out. I didn't have a good long buffer to kind of get used to that role. It was just, here's the fire, you're in it.
Yeah. So share with us a little bit, because you mentioned earlier, it sounds like you've got two different, we'll call them divisions. You've got the institutional investing side of the equation, then you have the financial advisory side of the equation. So you're sort of like institutional, but then you also have advisors that are working with the general public, right?
Yeah, so it's kind of, it's evolved over the years. So when I started, there was, let's say, Mike, myself, four or five of us off the top of my head. Is my God, I keep forgetting the numbers. And so a lot of wear, you know, I have to wear a lot of hats, smaller firm. So my focus was wanting to be more on the investment side, but I also needed to have that financial advisor experience and also take on that role because we have to pull as a team. And then as we have grown, I have shifted more and more to just the investment side, the investment committee, running the dividend growth equity strategy. And I have moved away from more of the direct client relationship management because we've brought in people that wanted to become CFPs. They wanted to be financial planners. And so they become the lead contact because I can talk to them about investments all the time or all day, but most clients really want to get into their cash flow. They want to know when they can retire, how safely they can retire. And that's really going to be led by the financial planning. So as we brought on more people to handle that role directly, they became the direct client. And then I was able to focus more on the investment side. And then I guess to say on the institutional side is that we also looking for advisors that are, you know, the regulatory environment is increasing, it's getting harder to run an individual IRA. So we can take that headache off their plate and help them grow their business while they don't have to worry about, you know, the E&O insurance, all these other things, and just they can now focus back on their clients. And so we can become more, we'll manage the portfolio, we'll handle all that back office stuff, we will handle the day-to-day headaches, and that's kind of the institutional side. And now we'll let that advisor do what they do best and talk to their clients. And now they can maybe go out and get more clients because they have freed up more time.
Sure. That's awesome. So you give them a lot of back office support, so to speak, regulatory wise, compliance wise, you know, like you talked about like that. And so do you also like bring people on, like you started there and I'll make the assumption, obviously you didn't have your CFA in the beginning. When you started, you're just like, hey, I want to work here, but I don't have any of the licenses. I mean, do you help with all of that, the foundational things that you need as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, for ours, we just need the Series 6 to 5. We don't have anything, any selling or anything. And for people that come on is like myself in general is that AMM helped pay for and help me get my CFA designation because not only it helped me, it helps the firm. It brings us up professional level, elevates us a little bit. And so the same thing with, we have someone coming in that wants to pursue the CFP, they want to be a financial advisor, they want to go the CFP route, but we're going to help them that way as well too, help them grow there.
Nice. Awesome. So your day in and day out, is it 90% CFA institutional stuff then? Is that what your normal day to day is? Or are you working with some direct clients as well from time to time?
Some direct clients time to time. But yeah, it's definitely more on the investment side, the research, the portfolio management, and then also the investment committee and coming up with the asset allocation and what assets we want to put in the overall portfolio for all the clients. Because we have the wide range, like a lot of advisors out there. They have the ones that are completely retired, need to find as much income as they can right now, to those that are in the accumulation phase and they just want to make sure that they're growing the money at a good rate and they're not putting too much of it at risk for a permanent loss of their capital.
Gotcha. So you've got a good pulse on the advisors that are working there directly with the consumer, right? That's their day. Yeah. And they don't alternate like you. So you wear multiple hats, whereas like the CFP or the advisor that comes in, you know, they're just working with the, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, if you will, out there, but you've got a good pulse on what it is that they deal with every single day, right?
Yeah. And our office it's unique. We're not in a true kind of office park area. Our founding partner, he had a lot of property in Rancho Santa Fe. And so he had built out on that. And so he built our office building on the back end of his property. So we have our own driveway up there. It's this nice secluded little spot. It's quiet. We used to actually have tomato fields across the street from us. Those are long gone. They built those into homes now. But we have kind of this open office plan. So we're all talking to each other. We all see each other. And if you take a CFP, you know about the markets, you know the investments, you know kind of what's going on as well too. So we're talking back and forth. And the advisors that are client facing, you know, they're coming to talk to me and Michael Moore, our chief investment officer and one of the other partners, about our thoughts. Why are we invested in this asset class? Why would you have this stock? Why do we have this ETF versus other ones? And so it's just a constant back and forth. So there's the fingers on the pulse, just because we're all around each other. We hear each other talking to clients back and forth. And hey, that was really great what you said. Or it's like, oh, I heard you struggling with that concept or that talking point. This is what we were trying to do here.
Gotcha. So then are Mr. and Mrs. Jones then coming into this secluded office as well, or how have things changed since COVID over the last couple of years, especially being in California?
It has. Well, for that year of COVID, I was high risk with the pregnancy. We were locked down at Ocean Beach by ourselves. So I was working from home that year, but I think the clients didn't come in as much during that time, obviously. But now, as things have opened up, we have clients that do come in. And I think, like a lot of people, there has been that shift to that hybrid of we can do more Zoom meetings. So we can make sure we're saving your time, so you don't have to drive all the way down here if you're not in San Diego County, or even, you know, San Diego County is big. So you don't have to drive 40 minutes from East County all the way up to here. We can meet over Zoom, over the computer, just phone. So the hybrid has developed more. I would say before COVID, it was maybe phone calls and yes, come in, let's look at everything. And we talk face to face as best as possible, because we have clients in pretty much almost all 50 states. But yeah, it's, I think just in general, the avenue of being able to talk to clients has expanded for the better, where you can just meet them on any terms that they want.
Nice. So now how many of you are there that sort of wear both of those hats simultaneously?
Two. So Michael Moore and myself.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So you're a pretty integral part of AMM then.
I would like to think so.
For sure. Right. I mean, of course you are. So founder, CEO, I'm assuming then that's Michael.
He is one of the partners. So AMM was founded by Gabriel Wisdom, who's still there, a partner, and Bruce Spear. Bruce Spear died before I got there. And then that's when Mike started buying in and became a partner with AMM. So I've only known them as the partners since 2007. I think maybe it was 2005 when Bruce Spears passed away.
Oh, I gotcha. So like right before you even came on.
Yeah.
So once you started working for them, then how much has, you know, how much growth has there been then? Because it sounds like it was started not long before you started there, right? So what's the growth look like, and what's the trajectory for growth, and what are the, I know like multiple questions here, but, and then what does the makeup of the clientele for AMM look like?
Let's see if I can get all these. Let's see. When I started, I think we're around 100 million in assets under management. We are now at 506 million in assets under management. I mentioned earlier, we'll have advisors kind of roll in and join AMM. And so we actually had just done our biggest one to date, another San Diego firm, WealthQuest, has merged in with American Money Management. And so that brought in, over around 100 million or so. So that's what recently boosted us up. And so I don't know those growth numbers off the top of my head, but it's been slow and steady growth. There's sometimes where, again, chip on the shoulder, you hear stories about an RA that's just launched, that started with, you know, less than we have at that moment, and then they've grown really, really fast. I don't know how they're doing it. I don't know if it's very sustainable growth, but yeah, I think feel like we offer a very good service. I think we treat our clients with, you know, the utmost care, and do our investments with as much diligence as we can, and make sure that we're really protecting their wealth. And so I would think that we would grow just as fast, but haven't.
It's competitive, right? It's a super competitive industry. So the last question then that I asked was, what's the makeup of the clientele? Like, what is the, basically your range of, or what's your, I don't call it the ideal sort of demographic. What's that sort of look like for your firm?
Yeah, that one's going to be the tough one to nail down. Is, you know, the joke is always, you know, we're American Money Management. You American got money? Come on in. That's the client base. Yeah. But it's definitely kind of more, like I was trying to say, we're kind of family office for the mass affluent, where high earners, the Henrys, you know, the high earners not ready to retire yet, those that do are high earners and have a high savings rate, you know, $500,000 plus as well. And then also to the high net worth. I don't know what a cutoff would be from ultra high net worth to high net worth. I don't think we have, you know, I'll put ultra high net worth, that 100 million plus, and we don't have clients at that level yet. Gotcha. So I would say, but it's mostly kind of that mass affluent. Most clients could be in California.
Okay.
I don't know exact location breakdown, but I would say more Southern California, kind of the LA, San Diego area.
Gotcha. But you did say you got clients in like all 50 states. So where did those, you know, come from? Is it from having other homes or is it just word of mouth? How does that work?
Gabe actually had a radio show for a long time. And so that got syndicated and got picked up across the nation. So, and I don't know if I might have to walk that back. I don't know if we have clients in all 50 states. I know at one point when we had the mutual funds, I think we were blue skied in all 50 states.
Okay.
So technically we could. Sure. So I might be mixing up those two, but I know that we have clients back east. We have some clients in the Midwest area. So it's a good portion of the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah. Multiple states. And of course, you know, with technology available now, you know, much unlike, you know, the system that we're using to do our video version of the podcast, it's actually made it really easy to be able to, you know, bring new households on from other parts of the country.
Yeah. And just the ability, the low entry now for being a media, like this podcast, doing YouTubes, that barrier is very, very low and you can reach that wide audience wherever they are.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So what is the, is there an age range that a lot of your advisors are, you know, looking to work with or are working with? I mean, is it more of the boomers right around the retirement, or are you looking to work more with like millennials and Gen X and Gen Y?
I would say right now it's definitely more those closer to retirement and those in retirement. Our CFPs, they are very young, talented women, and I know that they will want to find their niche as well. So we always like to say that we have kind of an entrepreneurial spirit at AMM, where we're working together, all rowing kind of the same direction, but we give you leeway to pursue other paths in this business to generate business for yourself and clientele. So I know that they want to find maybe some younger niches, maybe young professional women. And so that's where we want to push them and nurture them and like, yeah, go for it. You know, try to bring in a different clientele with a different messaging and how you want to do it. If you want to do a podcast, if you want to do YouTube videos, if you want to do it somehow, Instagram, if there's a way to do that, yeah, let's try it. Let's go where you think your clients and the people that you want to serve are.
Nice. Awesome. Well, Tim James, it sounds like he's got a pretty good recipe for success out there in Southern California.
Yeah. Just keep acquiring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. You guys did all the hard work, got the foundation in place, and then it's fun to, it's kind of weird. I'm kind of going through that now in my business. It was like so much, there was a lot of struggle trying to figure things out. And then all of a sudden there you are. And then things just start flowing to you. And you're like, oh, okay. Liking this, hard work paid off. Yay.
And you get to a certain size, you can try new media, you know, advertising and different ways to do it. You know, so like rise of digital advertising right now is okay. Hey, we have the resources now to really try it and hire someone that knows what they're doing instead of us just kind of poking and prodding and just kind of tripping over ourselves.
Yep. Get some experts. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, I think that's, do you have any more questions, Carter?
No. I think that was a great, I was curious. I asked a lot of those different sort of questions because it's a unique business because I'm not used to having like your institutional investors there, but then the financial advisors who use you are working. So it's like B to B to C almost. So I just wanted to get a clearer picture for our investors.
Yeah.
So
cool. Awesome. All right, guys, we'll take a quick break. When we get back, we'll flip the script and then Glenn gets to ask me anything he wants on health. We'll be right back.
You want the absolute best for yourself and you want it to be easy. That's why we created Green 85. It helps with detoxifying the body gently. We're proud it's chemical-free, unlike almost all other supplements you'll find. Bottom line, Green 85 will get you healthier. We look forward to hearing what Green 85 did for you.
To
To get this product and our other amazing products, go to chemicalfreebody.com. That's chemicalfreebody.com.
What's up, Enrichers? Tim James here. I'm back with my co-host, Carter Wilcoxon. Again, today in the house, we've got Glenn Bush. And now we're going to flip the script. And Glenn, you just get to ask the questions and I'll answer. It'll be a lot of fun. Did you have anything in mind for yourself personally or a friend or family member? Public health, anything like that?
And he's got a newborn too. So, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
I might have failed that homework assignment. I didn't have anything specifically for myself, but I'm curious about you're moving to Eastern Oregon. My sister lives Northeast Oregon, so was her Enterprise, Oregon? I don't know if that's the area you're going
to.
Yeah,
that's the area. Yeah, it's pretty close. Yeah. LeGrand, Eastern Oregon. Yeah.
Okay, but I was just more interested into kind of the building aspect of it because my girlfriend, she's actually, for lack of a better term, an interior designer, but more on the institutional and business side. And so she has a background in well-being. How do you design buildings to make it, I'm going to screw it up here, but not, yeah, but for, to promote health, promote well-being and promote so that your workers aren't sitting underneath, you know, in a cubicle with those lights hanging down, but how do you get people moving around? So I'm curious more about what it is on the building side, like what, not exactly how to put it, but
how to build a healthy home?
Yeah, essentially.
Well, the most, we were talking about this, you know, pre-show, which is I think we were talking about, I'm actually building a house and we're going to build a chemical-free home and shoot a documentary about it. So I think the bottom line is that most people are not aware of how polluted we are as a species, and we're actually polluting the rest of the species. I mean, I remember just recently, I was over at having lunch with somebody outside in a shopping mall type of thing, and not something I normally do. And we were having lunch and, you know, I saw this little blackbird and he's got like cancer on his foot. He's walking around, you know, and I see this stuff all the time. I look at animals, I look at human beings now, and I'm just like, I don't know. I'm like the original Terminator. Like I'm scanning everything all the time. Do you remember when the lights went out in the car and he's like, oh my God, can you see? He's like, I see everything. Like when it comes to health, I am just really tuned in on that stuff. I scan people. I just do that. When I go to people's houses, I open up their fridge. I open up their pantries. I want to see what's in there. And, you know, by looking at their bodies, I kind of already know. I've done it so many times in so many households doing detoxing, taking people shopping and that kind of stuff. So, Glenn, I did want to share something with you and I'll get to it. But there's three words to plug into your browser when you're done listening to the show. It's umbilical cord chemical. And if you type umbilical cord chemical into your browser, you're going to see that every child being born today has, they look for like 400 toxic chemicals. They find 71% of what they're looking for in these children every time. Your child included, and you and Carter and me. So what ended up happening was of those 250 chemicals, they found 180 caused cancer in humans and 212 caused developmental and brain disorders. So what I realized about 9 years ago is, oh shit, we're all polluted. And the older we are, the more time we've had to bioaccumulate these toxins from the air we breathe, the food we eat, the personal care products, the clothing we wear, Glade air fresheners, the paint, the glues, things in the home, right? So I started getting busy on a plan how to get these microscopic invaders out the freaking out of my cells and out of my body. And that's been my mission ever since. And because we have so many people dealing with health issues and young children nowadays. Children are being born with type 2 diabetes. Children are being born obese. Children are being born with cancer. And cancer is now from ages 1 to 5 is the number one cancer, is the type, or number one killer of children is a tie between brain cancer and leukemia. So we got some problems here, and those are all chemical. Our children from 5 to 16, the number one killer is still accidents. Number two is brain cancer. Sorry, it's brain cancer and leukemia is number two. Number one killer of our kids, 0 to 5, birth to 5 is brain cancer, straight up. So with that going on, and you know, they're testing the blood serum, people, what I found out was that they're just testing the blood serum. In the fat and muscle tissue, those concentrations are actually 500 to 1,000% more concentrated because those toxins accumulate in fat. That's just what they do. And our body actually puts them in our fat and stores them to protect us as a protective mechanism. So we're freaking polluted, okay? And so when you have a home, how do you get your home to not for your child? So a lot of times when people get a new baby, I talk about this right all the time, Carter. A lot of people are like, oh, did you have a boy or a girl?
We had a girl.
Did you paint the room?
Her first room, yes.
How old is your daughter?
She is a year and a half now, 18 months.
Okay. So a lot happens when people get really excited when they're having a kid, and they should, and they want to make the room, the women especially want to make the room cute and, you know, hang all the stuff and make it pretty and stuff like that. But what they don't know is even if they like some of these VOC free paints, there's other toxins in these paints. That whole paint industry is really manipulative, right? You want so the paint that you paint in there is off gassing for 4.5 years as it cures, and that baby's taking 20,000 breaths a day, just like you and me and Carter. And it's those chemicals go in and they attach to the mucous membrane in the throat, and they go down into the stomach, and they go into the airways, and they get into the blood, the fat, and the muscle. And that's what happens. So it's this slow accumulation, and it's coming from so many sources. So that's why we just teach people, we give them the awareness of this stuff. And it's like, hey, if you want to have a healthy life and you want your children to have a healthy life, you really need to focus on controlling the environment. Now, unfortunately, we live in a polluted world today. If we would have 2000 years ago, we could just no problem. But we have these energy efficient homes where no air can breathe through them. We got the paints and all the stuff we talked about and carpets. I mean, if you have carpet in your home, it's off-gassing formaldehyde and you're breathing it in. You're embalming yourself every day if you have carpet that's made of synthetic fibers. So most of those synthetics are made from crude oil, and they're processed with thousands of chemicals. So it's real simple. You just start cracking your windows and getting fresh air in, especially when you're sleeping. I have a unit back here, which is, it's an air purification system. At least in your bedroom or your child's room, you should have one of those air filters. Just it's a system. You have it turned on 24/7, just cleaning the air. Like my air smells amazing. People walk in. I spent over a year going through, you know, filter after filter after filter after filter to find the one that I thought was the best for me. And then I share that with the people that, you know, follow what I do, our listeners and stuff. So, I mean, these things are really important, but people don't think about them. I mean, have you ever thought about any of this stuff prior to talking about it right now?
Myself? No, I know my girlfriend was concerned about a lot of that, especially the paint. So yeah, the VOC that you mentioned, that rings a bell. I mean, I was just, give me the paint, I'll paint the wall, and here we go.
Right, right. So it's really manipulative, because what happens is, like, when I learned how bad white rice and brown rice is for the human body because of hybridization and sprays and all what they're doing, and I went to, they said, get wild rice. So I went to the grocery store, and I was new into this lifestyle, and I saw wild rice on the front of the cover. And I go home and I'm cooking it up, and I looked at the ingredients. The first ingredient was brown rice. Second ingredient was wild rice. So I was manipulated. They're doing this on the paints too. They'll say no VOCs, right? But there's other things in there that aren't good. And you just have to listen to my episode on my show where I interviewed the expert on it, Andrew Pace, because it's been a while. And I was just like, what? You know, so I don't buy anything now unless I run it by Andy, or I buy it from thegreendesigncenter.com, because then I know it's completely chemical free. So he helps people build homes and remodel homes with chemical free building materials, which is
still. Go ahead. For the home you're building, do you still are going to use paint, or is there just a specific type of paint that?
Yeah, it's a type of paint. It's a non-toxic paint. Yeah. Okay. And I think what you can do too is, I think you can take Andy's paints and just primer it and paint and go right over the top of what you got and seal it, and then you're protected. But, you know, you just have to reach out to them and find out. But I'm pretty sure, I'm like 99% sure on that. But it's really important. You know, I did have a question, or I had a suggestion for you, because you have you've spent a lot of time in water, and a lot of these pools have chlorine in the water. And man, that's really tough on the system. So you have a lot of junk in your cells, bro. Anybody that spends a lot of time in chlorine pools is, there's a lot of toxins that get into, it is. I mean, chlorine's, it is what it is. I mean, so do you worry about that, or do you do anything? What do you do to mitigate that? Have you even thought about it?
I haven't thought about it. It's kind of one of those, if you've made my bed and I've kind of lied in it. My bigger issue is I'm fair skin, blonde hair, blue eyes. sun damage. My first, it's minor, it's carcinoma, but my first skin cancer was 26. And so every year I get checked, twice a year I do body checks, and this last year has been quite a few. It's just, I got to get something sliced off my body just because I've been out in the sun my entire life, the beach, playing all the sports. And I should have been definitely an indoor volleyball player, which probably been for my skin type.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of people that live like up in Finland, Norway, and that kind of stuff. They have, really fair skin, and they look really good because they didn't. So here's what I learned from one of my doctor mentors. And he said that the sun does not, just to clear things up, the sun does not cause cancer. We just have to be very clear about this. He said what causes cancer is that we are so polluted today that when we sweat, these toxic chemicals come to the surface of the skin through perspiration, and then those UV rays hit those chemicals on the surface of the skin, and that's where the cancers get started. So that's why it takes a lifestyle, a daily detox regimen, to push this crap out of your body. And it takes literally 2 to 3 years to get most of this stuff out. Now, if you go to a Hippocrates type health institute in West Palm Beach, Florida, in 10 days, 60% of it's out of the body. But it takes another 7 years to get the other 40% out. The body's very smart, and it just slowly releases stuff. And I've experienced this because I've been on this journey now 11 years. And, 3 years later, actually, I did this juice fast thing, which I'd never done before, for like 7 days. And that kicked in a whole bunch of, my body was removing a bunch of crap. And how did I know? Because I had body odor, and I don't usually get it, but it was like bad. Like playing basketball in the morning, nobody wanted to guard me. They just let me unassisted go in for layups. And these guys are very competitive. Nobody wanted to guard me for like a week or two because I stunk. My body was like pushing out. And I was like, wow, I have been carrying around this crap for years. Now, just recently, think about this. I've been at this journey for 11 years. I just got a new sauna about a year ago. I upgraded my sauna technology a lot from this new tech. And my first 2.5 weeks, I had acne breaking out of my chest, back, and face. Very excited. I knew it was working better. And then 5 months, after 2 months, every day for 5 months, I had all this gray crap in my towel just pouring out of me. It's like heavy metals were coming out of me. Like my body was releasing. So the sauna actually really stepped it up. So for you, I think that would be something that would be very good. Just if you could focus on getting really good air quality in your home, really good water quality, just for you, because you and your wife and your kids, everybody's going to breathe air and drink water. So doesn't it make sense? Like, we got to fix that. Get the air right and the water right. Eat fresh foods, do that kind of stuff, and get one of these saunas. And, we have products and stuff to help out with this too. That could be something that you could look at. And just make it a lifestyle. And just kind of clean yourself up, because skin cancer is not something to mess around with, because it can, it can go internally and metastasize to the liver, the spine, the lungs, and end up in other places. My aunt actually died of skin cancer, melanoma, and it was also in her lungs. And
yeah, that's where mine's also just been basal cell carcinoma. So it's like, I hate saying I had skin cancer because it technically is, but it's very small. It's very, you catch very early and just kind of skin it right off the top.
Sure.
And you can go for years where it's just more of a disfigurement versus melanoma, which is a much, much bigger risk.
Correct.
And scarier.
Correct. It's just something that, like, for me, like, I remember being on the operating table back in the day. And this is like one of the reasons that, I did come out of fear mode wanting to get healthy. Now I'm going towards, enlightenment mode, where I want to continue to be healthier. I'm looking to get healthier and healthier and healthier all the time, live longer, look younger, feel better, and then teach other people how to do it. I don't want to go back and get surgery again. I don't ever want to do it. I hope that I never have to go do that again. I still thank the doctors for helping me save my life when I needed it, had that emergency surgery. But man, it's who wants to do that? Nobody does. Nobody does. And unfortunately, if we don't pay attention to our inputs into this system, that's what's happening. 50% of us are dying of cancer right now. And on the current trends, by the year 2040, 2050, we'll be at 68 to 72% of people will be dying of cancer. And that's numbers like, 68 to 72% of people get colds every year. So if you've gotten a cold, that's where we're headed for cancer. So, but people don't think about their death. People, for some reason, think that they're never going to die. And that avoidance actually stops them on a spiritual path from actually truly living their life. Because when you understand that this is an limited amount of time and that you are going to die, and some at some point in the future, you will take your last breath and your heart's going to stop. That's going to happen. And if you start living that way, life becomes a lot juicier and you start paying more attention to things and you start getting more out of it. The sunsets are better, the relationships, the conversations, the paying attention to a leaf falling to the ground, getting excited about everything.
Yeah, there's a for saving and investing, there's actually a behavioral trick kind of that way where our future self, we don't know who that person is. So it's tough to save for them. So I forget who did it, but they did a test where they just took a photo of yourself, aged yourself 10, 20, 30 years, and put it on like their envelope for, you know, you got to put money in this envelope for savings. It was like a very simple test of, you know, put money in this envelope or that envelope, saving, spending. And so when they put the face of themselves aged on that envelope that represent how much you want to save, they put more in there because now they had a connection of who that person is. Like, it's me. That's me right there. That's who I'm saving for. So let's do that. So that's kind of the same little behavioral trick of it's you, but yeah, we just don't know that person. So it's tough to put them together.
Yeah. It's the mind, man. The mind manipulates things. That's for sure. Did you have any other questions for me?
Not off the top of my head I can think of. I'm just building. Is it still like wood? Is it different materials for it? Or
Yeah. It'll be wood frame construction. There was some, like the trusses, they use like a composite thing where they brace it and stuff like that. And I guess that is toxic, but we've already got a solution for that. I talked to Andy about it. And I'm like, dude, like, am I going to have to build my own trusses? I mean, because that could be more expensive. And yeah. He's like, no, we have this stuff. You just basically slather it on, paint it on, and it seals it in, and then you're good to go. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So yeah, we're trying to make it, you know, like we're not using regular insulation. We're going to use what's called rock wool, which is kind of interesting. They make insulation out of rocks.
Okay.
Very interesting. So, you know, just like they obviously grind it into a powder and then somehow spin it into some wool or something and you blow that stuff in there. I haven't really looked at it yet, but my builder was telling me about it. So anyway, I plan to learn a lot, and I'm actually building a hot yoga studio in the house because I'm really big into yoga and stuff. But thinking about it, I'm like, okay, this really has to be non-toxic because this thing's going to be heated up to 104 degrees every morning, right? And Andy's like, oh, I've already built one of those. I've already went through. I know exactly what to get you, what flooring. He goes, I already did this for another guy that built a hot yoga studio. So I was like, yes. So he already knows exactly what to do. So. He's a good contact. He's a really good contact. If you and your wife again are looking to, you know, de-chemicalify your house or use any building materials, thegreendesigncenter.com, and then obviously I can help you at chemicalfreebody.com. We help people with the air and the water and all that stuff.
Yeah, my heart of hearts is our house is I like to do a down to the studs remodel. You know,
yeah.
But you dream of, I don't know if that would ever be, you know, mentally rewarding as you kind of move the family around, but add on to the house and take it down because the house was built in the 70s and okay, let's bring everything up to speed,
up to code and stuff like that.
So
there is going to be a worry. You can look at your older self, and I'm going through this with my parents now because they've been in the house 50 years and now it's like it literally needs that done to it, but like where are they going to live in the meantime? And they're older and there's pains and aches and you know all this stuff. And And they, my dad doesn't really want to leave the house. That's his comfort zone, right? And so when you're 82, it's just not that easy. So if you had that picture of the 82-year-old Glenn, it might be a good idea to get that done at a certain time so that, you know, you don't have to worry about the electrical wiring or the plumbing going bad and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden you're 82 and then they're ripping your house apart. Yeah. That is a big deal. We just did the outside of my parents' house because it was overdue. You know, for maintenance, we did new siding and roof and all that stuff. And that was still very hard on my mom and dad, right? So now I'm building an addition onto the house. It'll be all brand new construction. Once that's done, then I put two bedrooms downstairs just on purpose. And then if they want to remodel the bathroom, which they do, they can just go in and use the other bathroom, right?
Yeah.
Or if we want to do the bedroom and do the other addition out on the other end, then they can just live in those bedrooms. Real simple. And then we can remodel the other house and it won't affect them. Just kind of keep them. So I think that's a good idea. If you're going to do that, you know, think about it. I don't know if prices are on stuff ever going to go down again, but I mean, it's ridiculous. Everything costs so much now, but
yeah, we'll see with the little one running around, a toddler, it's won't happen anytime soon, but like maybe when she gets close to being a teenager and we want maybe a little space away from her.
Yeah.
Maybe put that master bedroom up top, you know?
Yeah. That might be a plan.
There you go.
Might be a plan. Take care of your health and you won't have to worry about it. One thing I did a lot of reverse mortgages for years, and a lot of people they had to sell their homes because they just couldn't get up and down the stairs. So usually what they would do is if they really liked the house, they'd build a master on the main level if they didn't have that. So they didn't have to go up and down the stairs. Then the upstairs was never used. Or they would buy, you know, those chairs that go up the wall, right? Back in the day, it was like $8,000 for a single run, but if the thing had a corner, then it was like 13. So it's probably double now. But so you can get yourself one of them chairs, Glenn. You know?
Yeah, it's just like the movie Gremlins. That's all I remember. That chair going haywire and shooting them out.
Yeah,
totally. I totally remember that. That's funny. Hey, Glenn, seriously, thank you so much for coming on today and being our guest on the Health and Wealth Podcast. You were fantastic. And is there anything else that you want to, you know, share with the audience and obviously the enrichers? We'll have all in the show notes about how to get in contact with you and all that good fun stuff. Because as you know, a lot of our enrichers are advisors that are maybe looking for another potential opportunity, or they love hearing your story about, you know, your institutional side of things. So anyway, anything last minute that you want to share with anybody?
I mean, you can see more about my investment philosophy and what I do. I do have a YouTube channel that we do for AMM. I can probably send you the link and we put that in the show notes.
Perfect.
So it goes over, you know, what we're buying, also kind of our quarterly letter, investment philosophy. So that's one way to get to see me and also can learn more about what I do.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Well, hey, enrichers, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the Health and Wealth Podcast. And to be able to see Glenn and all of our other wonderful guests previously, make sure to check out our website at www.thehealthandwealthpodcastshow.com. And then make sure to please share, like, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, or Google. So for my fantastic co-host, as always, Mr. Chemical Free Body himself, Tim James, I'm Carter Wilcox, and CEO and founder of CSI Financial Group, wishing you all a very wonderful rest of your day. And until next time, we will see you on the Health and Wealth Podcast. Thanks, everybody. Hey, enrichers. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Health and Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Carter Wilcoxon.
And I'm your host, Tim James. And by God, we are committed to helping you guys have fat wallets, flat bellies. So tune in again for another episode and make sure to like, share, and drink a lot of water.
Or beer.
You have just listened to the Health and Wealth Podcast with Carter and Tim.